Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, September 12, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of City of Monticello, and the headline reads, Time Running Out for Airport. Time's running short for Monticello's airport, which could end its nine-decade run as a local landing spot next February unless an agreement can be worked out to address side setbacks and line-of-sight deficiencies from one end of the grass strip runway to the other. The Monticello City Council on Monday approved an airport committee to look into the issue and report back with recommendations for the City Council. The state has told the city that waivers issued in 2000 allowing the airport to operate will not be renewed after they expire on February 2, 2019. The site's landowner has also told local officials they have no interest in continuing to lease the 18 acres the airport sits on. That lease expires at the same time as the state waivers. Attempts to build a new facility in the past have stalled, so a grassroots group trying to save the airport told a Monticello Chamber of Commerce gathering on September 6th that the best shot at remaining open would be to keep it at the same spot off of Kratz Road, just south of Monticello, despite the hesitancy of the current landlords. As we look at the different options that are in there within the time frame that we are looking at, having really exhausted many of the other options for a replacement facility, what we believe is left as the only option is looking to modify the existing airport to really rectify the site transition and line-of-sight issue along the runway, said Brad Hamilton, the Director of Aviation Services at Crawford, Murphy, and Tilley. Those attending the Monticello Chamber of Commerce meeting last week were told the facility provides an annual $1.3 million boost to the local economy, according to a 2006 study done when the city attempted to build a new airport. Pilot and aeronautics enthusiast Fred Sikorsky told the audience that losing the facility would be a tough blow to the community. Tens of thousands of people come through this community because that airport is sitting there. They just might land on their way to Wisconsin. They may come to get work done on their airplane. They might come to learn to fly or hang out with the glider club, visit friends. But they've got their on-ramp there. They can land. We don't want to lose that dot on the map, said Sikorsky at the lunchtime meeting. During the presentation, it was also noted the airport benefits the community in several ways, from providing a spot for aerial crop sprayers to take off and land, to emergency flights and recreational opportunities through the Illini Glider Club. The city floated the idea of a new hard surface airport in 2006, but that plan fizzled after not getting council approval. With time running out before the waivers and lease expire, Hamilton said the best bet for keeping the strip open to the public is to keep it where it is and address its issues despite the current hesitancy of the landowner. Former Monticello Chamber President Mike Atwood told a local economic development group may be willing to help fund the needed improvements, which include removing a high spot in the middle of the airstrip and providing more side setbacks to meet state guidelines. Airport proponents note there is little time to waste and that work needs to intensify if the airport is to remain open. Action items we've identified are number one, do a little more definition related to what the improvements require and what would be the cost associated with that, and then really working with the landowner to see if there is interest to be able to lease or sell the necessary property to make that happen, said Hamilton. And under the heading of history, we have this. In 1925, the first airplane landed in Monticello. And 3 years later, aircraft started to land in Kratz Pasture near the current airport site. At that point, 6-foot-long arrows were painted on the roof of the school gym to help airport aircraft recognize the city and find their direction. The airport became official in 1968 with permission from landowner Vivian Kratz. Sage Air was formed in 1988 to provide day-to-day operations, which it continues to do. In 2000, the Illinois Department of Transportation notified Sage Air of a pending downgrade from public facility to a restricted landing area due to the line of sight and side setback issues. Waivers were issued to allow the airport to continue operating. In 2015, a waiver extension was obtained, but the Illinois Division of Aeronautics has since told the city there would be no more extensions after the current lease expires on February 2, 2019. The current runway measures 2,798 feet long and 100 feet wide. Also on the front page, we have this article. It's under the banner of Court News. The headline reads, "Trial Dates Set for Local Neglect Case." A Piatt County judge has found there is enough evidence for trials to go forward for three people charged with criminal neglect following the death of a 64-year-old Monticello man. Jury trials for Mason Brown, 34, and Christy Brown, 61, both of Monticello, and Justin Tatman, 37, of Bement, have been tentatively set for January 7th. All three pleaded not guilty Thursday, September 6th, before Judge Bradford A. Rao, who ruled there was probable cause for their cases to proceed. All three have been charged with a Class II felony of criminal abuse or neglect of an elderly person after reporting that Ronald Blankenship, the brother of Christy Brown and uncle of Mason Brown, had died in his Monticello home located in the 300 block of West Monroe Street. On Thursday, Monticello Police Officer James Kiefer testified he responded to the home about 7 p.m. on August 23rd. He was met outside by Tatman. The officer said he found Blankenship unresponsive and definitely cold to the touch. Although a definitive cause of death has not been released, initial reports were that Mr. Blankenship had severe bilateral bronchopneumonia, a closed-off larynx, and suffered from diabetes. Kiefer said Mr. Blankenship was hooked to tubes connected to a stoma, an artificial opening made on the surface of the body, in this case in the trachea to allow for breathing. Mason Brown and Christy Brown lived in the home with Mr. Blankenship. Tatman, who along with Mason Brown claimed to be powers of attorney for Mr. Blankenship, lives in Bement. Defense attorney Roger Simpson said his client, Tatman, doesn't live there, he's not related, and therefore should not be subject to the neglect charges. Wagner argued that state law still considers Tatman a caregiver, noting its definitions include those who regularly visit or agree to regularly visit a person. Kiefer testified Tatman was in possession of a do-not-resuscitate order for Mr. Blankenship that he gave to police when they arrived. An adopted daughter of Christy Brown, who has Down syndrome, was taken from the home and placed in protective custody. Four dogs and three cats were also taken from the house, two of which were euthanized shortly after due to poor health. Mason Brown and Christy Brown also faced charges of aggravated cruelty to a companion animal. Prosecutors say there is an ongoing investigation into possible financial exploitation. Wagner said Thursday that subpoenas had been issued for additional medical and financial records. A court date to review those was scheduled for September 25th. Mason Brown had initially claimed on Facebook that his uncle had been murdered and that masked gunmen showed up at the home later in an attempt to kill the rest of my family. Carter said police responded to the Monroe Street home and found no signs of a disturbance. Turning now to page A2, we have this article. It's under the banner of Cerro Gordo Schools, and the headline reads, "Work Progressing Quickly on Cerro Gordo School Project." Construction work at Cerro Gordo High School began in the spring and continues while students are in session. Students have a pathway from the front of the 1929 building to the 1962 building while the renovation is underway. The precast wall panels are installed, the structural steel frame for the addition is complete, and around 30% of the decking is installed. The stick frame for the new roof over the cafeteria and kitchen is about halfway completed. The underground electric and plumbing is almost complete as well, said Superintendent Brett Robinson, along with panel caulking. I estimate we are at about 35% or so from completion for the project, he said. Students are handling it very well. They're quite adaptable. The roof decking should be finished by the end of this week, and once completed, the actual roofing will begin. Following roof completion, the installation of the floor slab and the connection addition will begin. Some have asked about the auditorium, and it will be completed later in the project, as the district needs to continue using it as a junior high gymnasium until the new gym is complete. The 8-lane, all-weather track is completed and striped, ready to go for the track season. The public is welcome to use the track as well. Robinson encouraged anyone who has questions to contact him. He added that the facility has handled, the faculty are handling the progress well. Staff is also handling it great. They've also proven to be quite adaptable and understanding, he said. I'm very pleased with the progress so far. I'm excited to come to work each day, see the progress, and envision how the project will positively impact educational opportunity for students in our school district. Next on page A2 is this article under the banner of Allerton Public Library, and the headline reads, Business Interested in Excess Library Property. An unnamed entrepreneur is showing interest in developing a recreation center on the west side of Monticello, possibly on spare land currently owned by the Allerton Public Library District. Library Director Lisa Winters told the Library Board on September 5th that more info may be presented at next month's session on October 3rd. He's interested in putting up an indoor rec center, said Winters, who said the interested party has discussed the possibility of purchasing 2 to 3 acres to the west of the library building on 4000 Green Apple Lane. He appears to have thought about this long and hard, and he's talked to others about properties, but he sees the appeal of the library being here and being a good neighbor. Winters also sees it as a good fit for the city-owned 30 acres next door, which was purchased as a possible home for recreational fields. The library purchased 10.98 acres from the Carl Foundation in December of 2012. And constructed a new building on it that opened in August of 2016. The building and parking lot occupy about half of the land, and Winters said they would also like to keep 2 to 3 acres for possible expansion. Monticello Director of Community Development, Callie Jo McFarlane, would not confirm whether there had been interest in a development, but said if such an effort was formally proposed, the library would have to form into a subdivision if it wished to sell a portion and would also need to consider access and utilities. The only access to the library land is currently off of Green Apple Lane. Ann McFarlane said it would not be ideal to access a second parcel behind the building by traveling through the library parking lot. Access would likely need to come off of Green Apple Lane between the library and Apple Tree Subdivision or off of Old Route 47. If divided in two, the land would be considered a minor subdivision. In Monticello, that requires administrative and city council approval only and no hearings before the Planning and Zoning Board. Winters said it would need to be advertised for sale and open to competitive bidding. This next section is entitled A Laugh Over Policies. Wording in a required policy elicited chuckles when read by Winters. Reviews of policies are required at board meetings in order to be eligible for certain state grants, but the library director pointed out that wording on intellectual freedom is showing its age. The medium of the internet is a brave new world, read Winters, which drew the first laugh. It has often been characterized as an electronic Wild West. Besides being drafted for the State Library's trustee fact file about a decade ago, Library Board member Luke Feeney opined, that's still pretty true. I don't think that's out of date at all. Library boards do not make changes to those policies, but are required to review a certain number of them each year. And in other action, the board approved the annual budget and appropriation ordinance for the fiscal year that began July 1st. It had no changes from the preliminary document that had been approved earlier. They also heard that 258 youth took part in the summer reading program, including 68 preschoolers, 134 in the first through the fifth grades, and 46 middle and junior high school age children. Winters said the 6th through 12th grade numbers showed an increase over last summer, and was told the board was told plans are being drawn up to repair and expand the irrigation system. The work may not be completed this fall as originally planned. Turning now to page A3, we have this article under the banner of Piatt County Schools. The headline reads, Using Blank Spaces to Inspire Students. Perched on the top rung of a ladder and composing a 12-foot-high piece of artwork freehand had Cerro Gordo High School graduate Haley Witz wondering what she had gotten herself into when the artist agreed to paint a quote on a wall in the elementary school foyer. I forgot how large that wall was. I was a little nervous, but it turned out well, said Witz, a 2015 CGHS grad who is an accountant by trade, but keeps her artistic bent going with her Witz End Boutique Etsy shop. The colorful painting, featuring a quote from Brian Skvavec, ties directly into the elementary school theme that ends with the plea for students to be the nice kid this year. Pieces of wall work featuring positive reinforcement are becoming more common in local schools. Monticello Middle School has used student input to decide on several for its masonry walls, and they are getting passing grades from both middle school attendees and educational staff. I think the students think it looks cool, and they also feel good they had a part in choosing what was put on the walls, said MMS Assistant Principal Denise Trester. Jake Romano from Herf Jones put the black vinyl lettering up, and Trester said it also helped to get some things up on the bare walls. One of the largest quotes at MMS is a 6-line, 12-foot-high one that says in part that in this school, we do second chances, we forgive, we respect each other, we keep promises, and ends with, we belong, we are family. Another saying that lines a hallway states, every morning you have two choices, continue to sleep with your dreams or wake up and chase them. And if you look up, there are even 4 inspirational quotes on the school atrium, the central area where each classroom wing meets. Students are invited to submit quotes and came through with a list of more than 20, some of which may be added later. They included sayings from Archimedes to Will Rogers, A.A. Milne, or of Winnie the Pooh fame, and prominent poet Maya Angelou. BMIT schools are also using visual aids to encourage students. At the elementary school, there is a large bulletin board that outlines pausative behavior, that's PAWS. Students were divided into 4 houses, and they can earn points for their houses throughout the week, said superintendent and elementary school principal Sheila Greenwood, noting students can see progress on the bulletin board. The district is also using the acronym TEAM as its theme this year, which stands for Together Everyone Achieves More. Cerro Gordo Elementary School Secretary Stacy Wildman got the ball rolling on the entryway artwork at the school, finding the quote that ties into the district's theme to promote kindness. She also booked Witz to climb that ladder and get it on the wall. I think it's an important message for the students because it encourages them to embrace their individual strengths, said Witz. It also promotes inclusiveness and reminds the students to be the nice kid every day when they walk into the building. Cerro Gordo Elementary School Principal Jody Neville summed up the positive reinforcement effort simply. The world needs more nice people, she said. And now, turning to page A5, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Charles A. Red Gadberry, 89, of Monticello, passed away at 6:17 p.m. September 7, 2018, at the Kirby Medical Center in Monticello. The funeral service was held at 12:30 p.m. Wednesday, September 12, 2018, at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. Visitation was from 11 to 12:30 p.m. prior to the service. Interment was in Graceland Fairlawn Cemetery, Decatur. Memorial donations may be made to the Monticello Athletic Boosters. Helen West, 86, of Monticello, formerly of East Orange, New Jersey, passed away Sunday, September 9, 2018, at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. A memorial service will be held at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, September 16, 2018, at the Piatt County Nursing Home, with Reverend Richard Ratz from Crossroads Church officiating. Memorial contributions may be sent to the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello, Illinois. Sharon A. Zindars, 75, of Bement, passed away at 3:35 p.m. Friday, September 7, 2018, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. Celebration of Life services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, September 15th, at the First Presbyterian Church, 249 North Macon Street in Bement. Pastor Marcia Frederick will officiate. Cremation rites have been accorded. Burial will be in the Bement Township Cemetery. Hines Funeral Home in Bement is in charge of arrangements. And now, returning to the news and views, on page A4, we have this article. It's under the banner of Marissa's Purpose, and the headline reads, Lineman Tries to Remove Stigma from Disease of Drug Addiction. Addicts are not bad people, they're sick people. That was the message from former NFL offensive lineman Randy Grimes, who spoke in Piatt County schools on September 7th, prior to a town hall meeting held in Monticello that evening to discuss substance abuse issues. Grimes told students he threw down pain pills for 20 years to deal with chronic pain issues from the rigors of a 9-year career as a center for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But when he retired at the age of 32, the addiction stayed, requiring rehab stays. He said getting such help, along with a spiritual awakening, helped him recover. I want people to understand that getting sober was my greatest accomplishment. That was the hardest thing I ever did, and it's the most rewarding thing I ever did, he said. Grimes also noted that although categorized as a disease, addiction is not treated that way, despite the top cause of death among those less than 50 years of age. If that was any other disease, it would be the lead story on every news channel, every night, all day long. That's all you would hear. But because it's addiction, even though it's the number one killer, you don't hear anything. And that's the stigma that's associated with this disease. And that's what we're trying to tear down. The former NFL player hopes his story tells people that there's hope. There's help. And I know some of you have people struggling at your home, or you know somebody, some people who are struggling. There is hope and help. He encouraged those with issues to talk to someone, whether it be a friend, family member, teacher, or coach. Grimes is now an interventionist who helps professional athletes in baseball, hockey, and football. The town hall meeting, coordinated by Marissa's Purpose, attracted 55 people who heard speakers that included Grimes and Tim Ryan, a recovering addict who also spoke in local schools earlier that day. It was a great success. We had 55 people there, and there were really good questions and answers and concerns expressed. I think everyone left there feeling like they learned something, said Connie Gior, the founder of the organization. On Saturday morning, 58 people showed up at Lodge Park to run in a 5K that helped raise funds for Marissa's Purpose. Our next article is under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, Technology Issues Looming Large for County Officials. Piatt County computer servers are failing at a rate that could pay off a proposed dual server technology upgrade within 2 years. But finding the upfront money is still an issue, especially with initial budget talks showing the county well short of funds needed for the fiscal year that begins December 1st. A county clerk server that stopped operating recently pushed the upgrade back to the forefront of a discussion at the County Board Building and Grounds meeting September 5th. The plan would be to replace the 16 aging department servers with 2 large ones that would provide space and backup for all county offices. The cost to purchase and migrate information from the current hard drives is $65,000. Technology consultant Scott Davis estimated at least 5 servers will need replacements over the next year, including at least 2 at the county clerk's office. at $8,000 to $10,000 each to replace individual servers, he said the upgrade could be paid for simply through the savings of not needing individual servers for each office. You're looking at upwards of $50,000 for five servers that you're going to have to spend money for because they are on life support now, said Davis. I'm just putting that out there because you're going to be on emergency mode on some of these servers shortly. One of those is in the county clerk's office, which had two servers stop working in the past 2 weeks. With the November election on the way, Clerk Jennifer Harper said, we're going to have to make some pretty fast decisions. Servers have a typical life of about 5 years, said Davis, and noted that many in the county are well past that, including one that dates to the year 2000. County Board Chairman Al Manent understood the issue, but said there is just no money at this point to pay for the project, which could expand to a $130,000 price tag if a new email system and software upgrades are also included. We're getting closer on budget issues, and quite frankly, there's no money for that at this time unless we can find some type of grant to help fund that, said Manent. I would recommend she, Harper, replace that server because I do not see that countywide dual server system happening in the near future. I understand the dire need, but Manette commented after preliminary budget talks, right now we're scratching trying to find out how we're going to come up with an additional $600,000 in the budget. County Transportation Engineer Eric Sebring suggested looking at each department budget to see if technology funds could be combined to help fund the upgrade. It's going to come out of the budget somewhere, he said. After pooling resources, how far off are you? Sheriff David Hunt said he does not put money in his budget for servers and that technology line items go towards computer replacement and IT support items that would also be needed. Committee member Bob Murrell made a motion to recommend purchase of the dual server system to the county board, but it did not get a second. Manent said more detailed budget figures should be known over the next month and lead to a more informed decision. Finally for today, under the banner of City of Monticello, we have this article headlined, Building Issues to be Addressed. Structural concerns surrounding the West Wall at 220 West Washington Street prompted the closing of a sidewalk in late July. Since that time, City Administrator Terry Summers said there has been ongoing communication with building owners and architects to address the issue. We had a very good meeting 2 Fridays ago with trustees, their architect, and city staff, he told the City Council on Monday. They're still working on some architectural drawings to get better estimates for either demolition of the West Wall or rehabilitation of the West Wall. Summers expects another update this Friday and feels that whatever remedy comes about will be before the end of this year. The building is currently vacant. One of its most recent occupants was Cabbage Rose Floral Market, which now operates out of another location. Aldermen will hold a special meeting at 7:30 p.m. Monday, September 17th to hear a presentation on the possible formation of a downtown business district. If implemented, an added sales tax would generate dollars that could be used for several purposes, including building work within the district. Budget talks for 2019 will also begin at the special session. Summers laid out a timeline that would include a possible truth in taxation public hearing October 22nd, first reading November 13th, and final approval on November 26th. Summers said he hopes to look forward as a part of the budget process, especially since the city will be paying off a portion of the pool bonds in 2021 and the remainder 2 years later. Alderman Joe Brown felt it was a need, expressing his view that we're not doing planning. We've had a 5-year plan for 3 years and haven't looked at it. Alderman John Miller noted time is running out to hire a consultant for the 2019 budget process and suggested dollars be placed in next year's budget for an analyst who could help for the 2020 budget. Alderman received an update on the expansive Stoddard Court water main replacement and roadwork. Capital Improvements Project Manager Brett Baker said the 2-year project will be complete with the laying down of a new oil and chip roadway this fall. This has been the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, September 12, 2018. I look forward to reading with you again soon. for Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.